Oriole is an elegant, high-ceilinged restaurant of sleek, modern design on West 42nd Street in Manhattan. It sits midway between tourist throngs in Times Square and Bryant Park's greenery. The neoclassical New York Public Library, whose entrance is attended by the twin marble lions, Patience and Fortitude, looms nearby. I was there on a pleasant evening in June 2014 with three companions at a window table. We arrived at Oriole after a short walk from the library lecture hall, where I had earlier delivered a talk on international finance. The library offered free access to the lecture. Free access to any event in New York City guarantees an eclectic audience, more diverse than my typical institutional presentation. One gentleman in attendance wore an orange suit, bow tie, sunglasses, and lime green derby hat. He was seated in the front row. His appearance did not raise an eyebrow. New Yorkers are not only bold dressers, they're typically astute. In the question and answer session after the lecture, one listener raised his hand and said, "I agree with your warnings about systemic risk, but I'm stuck in a company 401k. My only options are equities and money market funds. What should I do?" My initial advice was, "Quit your job." Then I said, "Seriously, move from equities to half cash. That leaves you some upside with lower volatility, and you'll have optionality as visibility improves." That was all he could do. As I gave the advice, I realized millions of Americans were stuck in the same stock market trap. At Oriole, it was time to relax. The crowd was the usual midtown mix of moguls and models. I was with three brilliant women. To my left was Christina Polishuk, retired top advisor to Barclays Global Investors. Barclays was one of the world's largest asset managers before being acquired by BlackRock in 2009. That acquisition put BlackRock in a league of its own, on its way to $5 trillion of assets under management, larger than the GDP of Germany. Across the table was my daughter, Allie. She had just launched her own business as a digital media consultant after 4 years advising Hollywood A-list celebrities. I was among her first clients. She brought millennial savvy to my lecture style with good success. To my right was one of the most powerful yet private women in finance, consigliere to BlackRock's CEO, Larry Fink. She was BlackRock's point person on government efforts to suppress the financial system following the 2008 meltdown. When the government came knocking on BlackRock's door, she answered. Over a bottle of white burgundy, we conversed about old times, mutual friends, and the crowd at the lecture. I had addressed the audience on complexity theory and hard data that showed the financial system moving toward collapse. My friend on the right didn't need any lectures on systemic risk. She stood at the crossroads of contagion in her role at BlackRock. Under Larry Fink's direction, BlackRock emerged over the past 25 years as the most powerful force in asset management. BlackRock manages separate accounts for the world's largest institutions, as well as mutual funds and other investment vehicles for investors of all sizes. It sponsors billions of dollars of exchange-traded funds, ETFs, through its iShares platform. Acquisitions engineered by Fink, including State Street Research, Merrill Lynch Investment Management, and Barclays Global Investors, combined with internal growth and new products, pushed BlackRock to the top of the heap among asset managers. BlackRock's $5 trillion of assets were spread across equities, fixed income, commodities, foreign exchange, and derivatives in markets on five continents. No other asset management firm had its sheer size and breadth. BlackRock was the new financial leviathan. Fink is obsessively driven by asset growth and the financial power that comes with it. He typically rises early, devours news, keeps a grueling schedule punctuated by power lunches and dinners, and is asleep by 10:30 p.m., ready to do it all again the next day. When he's not shuttling between his East Side Manhattan apartment and his Midtown office, Fink can be found on the global power elite circuit, including Davos in January, IMF meetings in April, St. Petersburg, Russia in June for white nights, and so on around the calendar and around the globe, meeting with clients, heads of state, central bankers, and other lesser-known yet quietly powerful figures. Such power does not go unnoticed in Washington. The U.S. government operates like the Black Hand, a mafia predecessor portrayed in The Godfather Part II. If you pay protection money in the form of campaign contributions, make donations to the right foundations, hire the right consultants, lawyers, and lobbyists, and don't oppose the government agenda, you are left alone to operate your business. If you fail to pay protection, Washington will break your windows as a warning. In 21st century America, government breaks your windows with politically motivated prosecutions on tax, fraud, or antitrust charges. If you still don't fall into line, the government returns to burn down your store. The Obama administration raised the art of political prosecution to a height not seen since 1934, when the Roosevelt administration sought the indictment of Andrew Mellon, a distinguished former Secretary of the Treasury. Mellon's only crimes were being rich and a vocal opponent of FDR. He was eventually acquitted of all charges. Still, a political prosecution played well among FDR's left-wing cohort. Jamie Dimon, CEO of JPMorgan Chase, learned this lesson the hard way when he publicly criticized Obama's bank regulatory policy in 2012. Over the course of the next 2 years, JPMorgan paid more than $30 billion in fines, penalties, and compliance costs to settle a host of criminal and civil fraud charges brought by the Obama Justice Department and regulatory agencies. The Obama administration knew that attacking institutions was more remunerative than attacking individuals, as FDR had done. Under this new black hand, stockholders paid the costs and CEOs got to keep their jobs, provided they remained mute.